Dear Helma, I'm afraid this tape will come under the heading of current history and not be too interesting. Perhaps it'll be useful for Ted to use in a class or something later on someday. Or I intend to file it as reference items in case I intend to do an article on it. Today is the 20th of December, and the subject for this tape is the Montagnard Revolt, which took place over the last few days. As reference for this tape, we have the book put out on Montagnards by the Special Force School, which I have at home there. Before starting at the tape, it'd be a good idea just to scan the book on Montagnards so you can see the different tribes, where they're located, and so forth. Actually, there are about 800 to a million Montagnards in Vietnam, and we have over 500,000 of them on the Highland Plateau area here. They're a very primitive people, similar to our American Indians. And they have the same problem racially between the Montagnards and Vietnamese that we have in Mississippi. The Vietnamese of a superior culture look down on the Montagnards as savages. Well, enough of that. Now for the problem. Last September, September of 64, the Montagnards revolted in several camps in the Tukor area and marched on the key city of Bon Mi Thuot in Darlock province. It was here they seized the radio station, and we had quite a bit of difficulty. It was also this time that General Freund got his publicity on the good work he did with the Montagnard camps when he actually went in and parlayed with the Montagnard leaders. Everything quietened down for a while here, and we thought that things were going along fine. General Caw agreed not to punish the people from Bon Zar Pa camp who had actually killed some Vietnamese. So with this lenient attitude on the part of the Vietnamese government, things seemed to be moving along well. Then in December, in Darlock province and in Quang Duc province, we got word that two camps, a camp of Ban Don in Darlock and a camp of Bu Prong in Quang Duc province, were going to revolt, move across the border, and take their American advisors with them, the Special Force A teams, as security against airstrikes. We found this out one morning through agents. By that afternoon, we were down at Bon Mi Thuot in the 23rd Infantry Division, and laid on plans to move out two companies from each camp out of the woods on maneuvers to cut down their strength in camp and to put off their move into Cambodia. Then, after that, we went into the two camps and moved them from their area near the Cambodian border up along Highway 19. Then we went back and picked up the other companies that were out in the woods on maneuvers and brought them to Highway 19. Well, what happened along Highway 19 at the An K camp and the Sui Doi camp is well known. After this fighting along here, however, the Ra Day tribesmen, which most of these people were, decided they'd had enough along that area, and they resigned. Being civilian irregular defense group, they can quit any time they want. They resigned, and we shipped them back to Bon Mi Thuot. General Caw was just as happy about this because we were faced with a problem in December of having to go in and strike these camps or try and disarm them forcibly. Here we had brought them up. They'd done a hell of a good job for us and lost three or four companies fighting the Pavan troops, the 95th Division along Highway 19, and now they were voluntarily giving up their guns just for transportation back to Darlock and Quang Duc provinces, so we came out ahead on that. Then in the summer of 65, we had trouble again. A group of Ibaham's people came to the camp at Bun Bring and actually subverted the camp. They came into the camp, had them imprison the camp commanders, and part of them moved off into the woods to join Fulro. Incidentally, at that time, Fulro, which is the name of this People Liberation Front with its headquarters in Cambodia, it's suspected it is advised by some French intelligence agents. Fulro also sent a battalion of theirs in the area. Well, the Vietnamese went into a road-clearing operations and then turned their troops quickly around and surrounded a Fulro battalion. This Fulro battalion surrendered and decided to go to the camp at Zuc My, a training center, and become retrained as regional force troops. We closed out the camp at Bun Bring and shipped the troops around as regional forces among other camps that we had in the area, among other regional force units we had in the area. Well, that's about the background for this, and it brings us up to date. On Thursday the 16th, the Vietnamese Secret Service picked up a group of Fulro agents in town. They included a Montagnard captain who was with our training center here and quite a cell of other people. They had flags, weapons, and so forth, and they were planning on an uprising here in Pleiku. This uprising was to be backed by three special force camps in the vicinity, Camp Playmorong, Playjurang, and Plato Lim. These camps were supposed to imprison their Vietnamese leaders and the Americans and march on the city of Pleiku. They were supposed to do this on the 18th, when the Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister were here for an inauguration or graduation at a Montagnard training center. They felt they could perhaps come in here and capture Pleiku and cause trouble while the Prime Minister was here, or at least, the very minimum, cause a large-scale demonstration. I was told this on the morning of the 17th. At that time, General Vin Locke said he hoped there were no Americans involved. This American involved goes back as an old story also. The CIA, or agency, used to run these tribes in here, and they kept their finger in pretty much, and General Kaw has felt that the agency was trying to keep their finger on the tribes in this country, Cambodia, Laos, and North Vietnam, so they could have a base of operations in case we ever pulled out. Well, next, back to the 17th. On the 17th, General Vin Locke alerted his troops and sent them out all around town. He also asked that we take one CIDG company that was guarding our airfield at Holloway and move that out of town. So we, in helter-skelter, moved that one down the road to get it out of town. A humorous incident happened here as it moved out of town. It stopped at nightfall and started digging in, and a tank company came down the same road, and they ran into them digging in, and we had a hell of a time to keep them from shooting each other. Well, things were pretty quiet that night, except they picked up about 18 or 20 infiltrators from the camp at Play Me with grenades and small arms ammunition. They were heading back into Play Coup. Then, lo and behold, on Saturday morning, we started getting a series of reports. In Phuban province, the district capital of Phu Thien was overrun. Actually, what happened, a former CIDG company from Bun Binh, which had been transferred into regional force status, revolted and attacked the other RF company, regional force company, in the area. One of Fulro's agents had gotten into the company and subverted them and had them attack the government forces at the outpost. After killing approximately 30 or 40 Vietnamese, they fled. That was Phuban province. Concurrently with that, we got a report that the CIDG camp at Lac Tien was also on the verge of revolting. Then we got word from Giania that a Fulro battalion had attacked and seized the province town of Giania. Concurrently, we also received reports that there was unrest at Playmorong and at Playjurang. So you can see, about 6:30 in the morning, we were really like cat on a hot tin roof. Things were happening in several directions at the same time. The biggest threat seemed to be in Giania, so I'll deal with that first. A Fulro battalion came in, walked through a Montagnard scout company, which just let them pass through, and occupied the province chief's house, something like the city hall or the state capital in this little outpost in this little town of Giania, which is really the capital of Quang Duc province. It's something like the Western frontier days, however. Well, the province chief, fortunately, was out on an operation. When he heard this happen, he came back in with a battalion of Arvin troops and some artillery. Well, they fired some artillery over the head of the Fulro, and the Fulro people gave up, laid their arms down, and said they would surrender to the government and swear allegiance to the government. They said, however, there was more Fulro units in the area that would come in, and what they were afraid of then, that if the others came in, these would go back and revolt again. So we flew in an airborne battalion near there just to keep their eye on them. So that takes care of Saturday. Now going back to Lac Tien. At Lac Tien, four men had come into camp and caused the camp to imprison their LLDB, or Vietnamese leaders, and harangued the troops to march on Ba My Thuot. Fortunately, all they convinced was six people, and they moved out the gate. The other strikers did not move with them. So that was a good indication that they're supporting the government in this area, at least at this time. Now back up to Phu Thien. The troops from Phu Thien marched across country and started turning themselves in, most of them, at a camp of My Lin. Now I can't understand how they'll do this, because here they revolted, killed a bunch of Vietnamese, and then after thinking it over, they decided they really didn't want to do it, and they came back under government control at My Lin. I'm sure that the government will take some of these people and stand them up and shoot them as examples, and I agree with it here, particularly the ones they can identify that killed Vietnamese. Then back up to Playjurang. In the afternoon, we had some people fly out there from the special forces, talk to the people, and we think we have that area settled also. This is on Saturday afternoon. So things were looking pretty good by Saturday. However, later Saturday evening, we got a report that 2,000 and then 4,000 BC and Montagnards were moving in on Vimy Tuit. So we had to have some night air strikes up. So that kept that night pretty well tied up. Fortunately, as Sunday morning came, the dust settled all over the area and things quieted down considerably. Then the general got a call from Giannia, from the province chief down there, who suggested that they have a big ceremony and pile all the weapons up with the flags and so forth and so on, have all the population there and the troops all lined up, along with this full row battalion who would stand there and salute the general and report to him and then get down on their knees and swear lasting allegiance to the Vietnamese government. After this happened, I went down with the general on this. It took us quite a while to get in because the weather was so bad down there. After this, the general got up and gave a fine speech in which he said that we're all Vietnamese, we must bury the axe, and so forth and so on. In other words, you can look on this as another Southern California Watts affair, shall we say. There's been people killed and so forth, but the government intends to overlook it, except for those people, and I agree 100%, up in the Phubon province who actually killed some Vietnamese, because what they did, they moved in there and cut their throats and mutilated the bodies and so forth. It was a pretty savage thing. So we hope we've got our finger pretty well on this and that the Montagnards have calmed down and we can go back to fighting the VC. This is an odd sort of three-cornered war. It sort of reminds me historically of Yugoslavia, or what I read of Yugoslavia during World War II, where you had the Germans in the field. Then you had Mihailovich's troops and Tito's troops, both fighting the Germans, but fighting each other whenever they saw each other. So it was really something. Another place that was very similar was in Greece, where you had the Greek communists and the Greek nationalists and the German troops, a sort of a three-cornered war again. So these things are not unknown throughout history. I know some of my young officers are really confused about this business of the Montagnards. Here you've got Montagnards that you may not be able to trust. You can't use them down in the area where the full row movement is and so forth and so on. But I point out to them this is not much different than the Austro-Hungarian Empire during its latter phases, where they had the Hungarians, Yugoslavs, Germanic races and all the rest mixed up. And they had to be very circumspect in the divisions they had to ensure that they didn't send a Slav division up against Russian troops. What they'd probably do is throw their guns down and march right across and join the Russians. Very similar to the Czechoslovakian group during World War I that went and joined the Russians and then later made a terrific history for themselves fighting against the communists and ending up all the way out in Siberia, all the way through Russia. So as I say, by looking at history, you find that this is not an unusual affair that we're going into here. It's something new for Americans, but I think it gives us a hell of a lot of better perspective of things we have to face as a world power and a lot more maturity to realize that things aren't just straightforward of fixing bayonets and charging madly down the road. Well, that about takes care of the Montagnard picture. As I say, I think we should save this tape because someday in the future I may want to do something on it. Incidentally, this also ties in with General Vin Locke's book on the full row movement, which I have here, and I hope to take back home with me. So that and the Special Force book on Montagnard tribe should give a pretty good background. Well, that's the end of this tape. I see I have a little more on it, dear, so I'll cover a little more of current history here, which may be of interest. Perhaps not to you, maybe Seymour would like to listen to the tape. Our major problem here since last summer has been that the VC buildup has been faster than the American buildup in this area. Initially, the 325th Division of the 95th Regiment, the 18th Regiment, and the 101st came into the area. This was between February and last May when they surfaced themselves. Then, in August, we ran into the 32nd Regiment at Duco. This was followed by the identification of three regiments of an unknown division, we think the 304th, however, that showed up during the Plamy Battle. The 32nd Regiment, the 33rd Regiment, and the 66th Regiment. In addition to that, we have two other Pavan regiments in the southern part of the Corps and another new one up near Kontum, and we hear there's another one moving in. So you can see there's a lot of Pavan regiments around here. Incidentally, the Battle of Plamy was quite a classic one. On the night of the 19th, the VC attacked the outpost at Plamy. The usual thing is to attack an outpost and then wait with an ambush force along the route so you can catch the reaction force, relief force, coming down the road. Well, we expected this one. The one thing that was unusual, however, was the VC had such a heavy concentration of anti-aircraft guns, 12.7, around the camp. They had a total of 18. The first day there, we had a B-57 bomber shot down. Another one shot up, had to land over here at Pleiku. Two A-1E shot down, and a helicopter. So we got the word there was a hell of a lot of anti-aircraft around the camp. In fact, what we think they did is look at the way we fought the Battle of Duco, where we landed right at the airfield next to the camp, and they drew up a plan to catch our helicopters coming in. Well, this time we outguessed them. We landed a few people north of the camp. Then we made an estimate of where the ambush site would be and sent a force down there. It was all prepared for the ambush. It turned back with his tanks and hit the VC regiment, the 32nd, so hard that they were scattered and didn't get in back into the battle until about 2 weeks later over in the Two Prong area. Then we moved down the road and hit the 33rd Regiment, which was really shaken by all the bombings. In fact, one day we had 120 air sorties on those people. After the relief of Play Me, the 1st Cav came into the picture and went through a series of air mobile exercises, chasing the VC all over the area, all the way to the Cambodian border. They had did a hell of a good job and surfaced the 66th Regiment, which they chewed up. Then the end of the battle, Yarvin came in.